KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Pete Seeger Tribute and Sing-Along happening Sunday, April 30th at 6:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. At this celebration of Pete Seeger's birthday, his life and his legacy will be honored. This event features a concert and videos, as well as a sing-along. Again, that's the Pete Seeger Tribute and Sing-Along, Sunday, April 30th at 6:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on, hold on.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and grant from the Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW.
Hi, you're tuned to KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter, and this is The Recovery Zone, a show focused on healing our world. Today, the focus is on issues that are faced by seniors in a skyrocketing rental market, and what's being done to keep them in their homes, and what still remains to be done. Here in the studio with me are Katrina Holland with the Oregon Community Alliance of Tenants, and she's also here with 2-month-old Gavin. He's incredibly cute.
Thank you.
And Joanne Harrigal of Elders in Action, Tram Huang of Welcome Home, and Laura Galino de Lovato of the Northwest Pilot Project. So thanks. I just want to say a big welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Great. And I wanted to start just with a couple of examples, maybe from a couple of you, like of what people are facing. And Laura, I thought I'd start with you. I know that your project serves people 55 and older, and last year you guys helped maybe 3,000 people. You do this almost every year. But what? Just give a typical example of what's going on for somebody and how you help them.
Yeah, so Northwest Pilot Project provides housing placement assistance to people over 55 in Multnomah County. And we typically get 3,000 to 5,000 calls annually. And somebody who's this week featured on the cover of Street Roots is very typical of somebody we see, somebody who's going along, doing okay, and then because of job loss, loses housing, and then ends up in a really vicious cycle of trying to get employment to try to pay for housing, but living in shelter or a vehicle while waiting for housing. Yeah. And so what we do is provide assistance with finding that housing, and then also rent assistance to cover the financial piece that is often missing with somebody who loses income.
And this woman, her name was Carolyn Will. What happened to her?
So she lost her job and then ended up getting evicted, and then finally got referred to Northwest Pilot Project, and we were able to help her get on a housing waiting list and then provide some rent assistance. And she finally ended up in an apartment.
So she's in an apartment now.
She's in an apartment now, but she went through a real process to get there.
And she was like in her car for a while
with her teenage daughter and cat.
Wow.
So yeah, it's sadly not atypical.
Not atypical at all. Mm-hmm. And how old was she? She was over 55.
I think she's 57.
Yeah. And how about you, Joanne? Did you have a story or two?
Yeah, Elders in Action gets about maybe 400 calls a month from older adults, and maybe over half of those are about housing. So one of the examples that I would give is a woman in her mid-60s who called us recently, told us that she was living in a single-room occupancy hotel for about 4 years. She was paying about $390 a month, and she had been on a waiting list for probably 27 months. Her disability income income was about $800 a month. And so relocation was going to be difficult for her because it's really hard to find a place that's not a, that's not subsidized housing that at a income of $800 a month. So what we try to do is get them hooked up with what other resources are out there, make sure they're on all the appropriate lists, and then see if there's anything else we can help with them, help them with, to decrease some of the costs that they have that are outside rent.
And did you manage to get her into a place?
Unfortunately, there's some of the, one of the phenomena that occurs with us is that we don't know necessarily what happens with individuals that call us, because they call when they're in the trauma, they get the resources, and then they move
on.
And we have had a hard time tracking them after they leave us. But that's something that we're really interested in doing.
Yeah, follow up. Yeah. And so this does seem to be a growing problem. I was reading this thing, Multnomah County puts out some point in time report, mm-hmm. and the over 55 population represented 19% of the homeless in 2013. It was 13% in 2013, but it was up to 19% 2 years later in 2015, and I just imagine it's getting worse. So what are some of the issues? Like, why is this happening to older people?
You know, Katrina Holland here,
right,
Community
Katrina.
Alliance of Tenants. We counsel about 3,000 calls per year. That's just counsel. We probably receive upwards of 5,000 or 6,000. And in a nutshell, the stories that we've heard from elders who are facing significant issues, most of the time it has to do with rent increases they can't afford, or perhaps evictions. Right now what's really prevalent is no-cause evictions from owners and property managers who are taking advantage of the market and how hot it is right now, and the lack of supply that we have. So unfortunately, the problems that we've seen is they don't have anywhere to go. We've heard things like, I don't know, I don't have any family here, or they've all passed, or
right.
How can I find, I don't know where I'm going to go. I don't have anybody to help me move my things. There was one woman in particular who was in line to receive some kind of life-saving operation, and her doctor said that he wanted to wait because she had gotten a no-cause eviction and she didn't know if she was going to have any place to live. The problems are huge. It's really devastating, unfortunately. And most recently, we heard of a woman who received a 50% increase in Ashland. I think she was 96 years old.
Oh, my God.
Didn't have anywhere to go. And she eventually received assistance for a little while and eventually located a place. But she was worried that it was going to take her life.
Yeah.
And she was worried that she started having issues with memory because of the stress of not knowing where she was going to live. And so, yeah.
And we're seeing the population of older adults increase just because of the number of baby boomers.
Mm-hmm.
Big population.
Here we
that
are.
As a cohort is just aging,
right,
as we,
yeah,
go along. And as Katrina sort of mentioned, and Joanne mentioned it as well, the incomes for many seniors are just very low.
Mm-hmm.
Retirement income doesn't go as far as it used to. Many people don't have retirement income. The cost of living increases for Social Security have been very low.
Right.
And so what we're dealing with is a population of older people who are by and large alone, living alone on fixed incomes that can easily be around $900 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
$900 a month.
I know of one woman who I think brings in about $1,700 a month, and her rent alone is $1,100. And so that gives her only $600 to live for the entire month.
Wow. And yeah, and rents are going up.
I, yep,
mean, that's what's going on with rents here in Portland? Could somebody address that?
Sure. Well, I just want to add to what Katrina was saying. This is Trom from Welcome Home, about the supply problem. You know, mm-hmm, this is a crisis that has been 40 years in the making.
Mm-hmm.
We've had four decades of federal divestment in building affordable housing. So we really,
starting with Reagan, actually, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It started way back. And so this should not catch us by surprise, but of course it is. And so what our coalition is doing, and our coalition consists of organizations like Northwest Pilot Project, Elders in Action, and the Community Alliance of Tenants, is we are building back the affordable housing infrastructure. So we need to place a value on it, just like we value our libraries and our bridges and all the other parts of our community. We need to invest in that. We wouldn't have fire stations if we didn't invest in the building of those. And we know that homes are just a critical foundation of those thriving communities. So what our coalition does is, you know, we're looking at revenue tools. In November, one of the small victories we had recently on November 8th was that we were able to pass a City of Portland bond measure that created $258 million of funds to build more affordable homes and preserve affordable homes in Portland. But we know that the problem is much bigger than Portland. We're seeing it across the state, you know, in Ashland, in Bend, in Coos Bay. Yeah, right. It's everywhere. So we're trying also to make this a regional problem and to make it a regional focus, and also to focus on the solutions that are being introduced at the state level, because there's so many of those.
Yeah, and I definitely want to get into that. And like, I mean, there are a bunch of bills happening in the legislature, which I want to talk about, but a little bit more about the problems. For instance, like somebody brought up no-cause evictions,
yeah.
And I read somewhere that I was reading about a couple of examples, and these women were being kicked out of units, or their rents were doubling, because it was actually out-of-state investors are buying real estate, buying big apartment buildings in Portland now.
Yes, that is true. I would also say, though, it is local property owners as well.
We are taking advantage of it.
Just taking advantage of the market, right? And typically the language that we hear is, well, the market will bear it. The market will bear it.
The old person won't.
Right. And low-income folks, and a lot of actually, I think PHP just recently published a report that showed that Latinos, African Americans, Native
Americans,
people of color
are even more affected.
Right, can't afford any place in the city based off of the 2015 ACS estimates of income, median
income. And especially when they're older?
Right, especially when they're older. And so it's ridiculous. I mean, so we are seeing, back to what you were saying earlier, there are out-of-state investors, but there are also some local owners and investors who are taking advantage of this market, realizing that the influx of population that we're seeing is not keeping up with the demand, which has been, as Trom said, a long-time problem in the city of Portland and around Oregon. But in order to take advantage of that, I mean, at least at the Community Alliance of Tenants, what we have heard is landlords are saying, I want a different kind of tenant, somebody that's paying higher, or they'll do building-wide evictions, giving no cause. In the city of Portland, you have to give 90 days notice, but in other places it could be 30 or 60 days, depending on how long you've lived there. And it basically is saying, you don't live here anymore.
Right.
Why?
For no reason.
No cause.
Right, but even 90 days in the city of Portland,
it's short.
If you've been living someplace for probably 25 to 30 years and you have a lifetime accumulation of materials, and
which is not uncommon.
Right. And you're in your mid-70s or mid-80s, that's overwhelming.
Right.
And then you're trying to relocate on an income that won't afford the existing rents.
Let alone the moving costs.
Right. And how do you move it?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
All of that.
And then the new, if you are lucky enough to find something, you've got a new deposit, new
first and last month's rent. Deposits.
And I think that, you know, the rent increases, the cost of rent. So the average one bedroom not too long ago was $1,400 a month. I think that's decreased a little bit. But, you know, if you're on a fixed income, or if you're low income, regardless of whether you're a senior or not, it's just really challenging to find something affordable. And then seniors have that additional challenge that they're not likely to be going out and getting a job.
Right.
Because they're elderly, or they're retired, or there's a disability. And then the other thing that compounds the challenge of finding, being able to afford the housing, is there just are not as many subsidies. mm-hmm. available.
Right. They're dwindling.
Fast.
Because one thing I read, Multnomah County's rental assistance program has less money in a way because the rents are higher, so they have to use more of their money for each person they're helping.
Correct. And so they're not able to help as many people. We hear about that time and time and time again.
Not able to help as many people.
Right.
And well, you're taking a pool of money and you're spreading it over more people, mm-hmm. but the pool isn't necessarily increasing.
Spreading it over more people with more expenses for each person.
Right. Who and each person is not seeing an increase in their fixed income that is equal to the increase we're seeing in rents.
Right. And the other phenomenon that we've heard is voucher returns. Mm-hmm. So somebody who has a voucher and looking to find a place, the rents are so high in some areas that they're not able to locate it. And I think, what's the period, like 6 months or
I
so?
I think it's 4 months.
Yeah, and it can be extended up to six mm-hmm. months or something like that. And if you don't find a place, you have to give it back.
The voucher back?
Yes.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. And HUD, just in the last minute here before we switch to the solutions and stuff, but sure. HUD is like sort of, it's really a question mark now, isn't it? And what is Housing of Urban
U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, right, yes. And it's under attack by the current administration, and the threat of cuts, the potential proposed cuts have already caused an impact to our local housing authority and pulling back their assistance that they provide through the housing choice vouchers.
And that's already after, 30 years of disinvestment, of decreasing funding from the federal level down to the local level. Mm-hmm. While that was happening, we weren't getting ready. And so I think we've all been in crunch time within the last 5 years to sort of help these people who have actually been sort of on the edge for a long time and now are out.
Falling off the cliff at this point.
Right. Yeah. Yep. And now the folks who are in the market rate housing are also falling off a cliff.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And to end with kind of a sobering fact, for every four people who qualify for affordable homes, there's only one. And so those other three are left to, like you said, mm-hmm. battle it out in the market mm-hmm. where you're paying, $1,200 for a one bedroom shared with many others in a home. And that's just simply not sustainable.
Mm-mm. Yeah, it's pretty incredible. We might get more back to that, but I wanted to let listeners know that you're tuned to KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter, and this is the Recovery Zone, and we're speaking about the elderly and how they're coping with the housing crisis right now. I have in the studio here with me Joanne Harrigal of Elders in Action, Laura Galino de Lovato of the Northwest Pilot Project, Tram Huang of Welcome Home, and Katrina Holland with Gavin, her two-month-old, mm-hmm. From the Oregon Community Alliance of Tenants. And if you'd like to call in with any questions or comments yourself, the phone here is 503-231-8187. And the HUD thing just seemed really overwhelming to me. I was kind of amazed. But we have been looking at stuff here, especially around Portland, like you said, that we got the $258 million bond passed, mm-hmm. and that's going to go toward affordable housing?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's going towards building and preserving currently affordable homes, and over the lifetime of the buildings, they're going to serve almost 60,000 people. They're expected to be affordable for, for 100 years. So we'll be able to serve about 60,000 people throughout the life of those buildings.
Okay, that sounds good, but how many are homeless actually right now in terms of that?
Sure, I think the point in time, the Multnomah County point in time results have not been released yet, but the numbers that I've seen are about 4,000 a night, and that's, on the streets. But we also have people who are crammed in overcrowded houses, sleeping mm-hmm. in cars, and I was recently listening to Andy Miller of Human Solutions talk about, he did a short presentation. He said, if we consider everyone that's experiencing housing instability, whether that's in a shelter or in a car, overcrowded homes, it's about 16,000 people mm-hmm. per night.
Per night,
yeah.
Right.
And then you've got, to add to that, the people at risk of losing their homes.
Literally, so they might check away.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. One check or one eviction. One rent increase away.
Yeah.
And so those people aren't necessarily captured in the number that Tram was talking about. Mm-hmm. But they're the people that, if we can preempt their eviction
right.
by providing them with some assistance, then it means that they don't become homeless, and that's much less of a financial cost to the community,
right,
and an emotional and physical cost to that person. And that's especially true when they're elderly.
Yeah.
And I read something, you know, I mean, like, that money is actually almost more important than housing. It was actually a woman from the former executive director of the Northwest Pilot Project. She had this thing that we need $1 billion.
Mm, yes.
And, probably more than
like
that.
Like a
fund. To solve the problem. Right, right,
and,
right.
So, I mean, like, affordable housing is good, but, like, as you were saying, if we can just, like, give people the funds to stay in the homes that they're in.
So that another thing that the city actually passed with the leadership of Chloe Udaly was relocation funding that's available to people who are in who have received evictions or high rent increases
above 10%,
right?
10% or above.
So that if you have received a notice of either rent increase or an eviction from your landlord, you have the possibility of actually requesting relocation funding from them.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing there is, for older adults specifically, there is paperwork involved. In some cases, there's some legal assistance that's necessary. And so we really encourage people, if you want to avail yourself of this opportunity, to call either one of our organizations directly and see if you can get some help with that. But do it quickly, as soon as you get the letter, because you have something like 14 days, I think, to notify your landlord.
At this time, it's 14 days after receiving the rent increase. That's when you have to give notice to your landlord, and the landlord has 14 days to give it to you.
Wow.
Depending on how many units you have will decide how much money you get. I think it's somewhere between
$2,900 and $4,900, depending.
And so, and who's helping with this now? The city's helping?
The city of Portland passed the ordinance, and Legal Aid is assisting, I think, probably CAT, as well as all of our organizations are assisting people with it and sort of
helping them understand it and navigate it. Yeah.
Right.
So that is a little way to get some money to the people who are really desperate.
Correct. For relocation.
I was just going to go back to the $1 billion. So my predecessor, Susan Emmons, I think, was trying to get a handle on what it would take to solve the problem. And if we were to put $1 billion toward the issue of housing for all the people who were homeless and facing eviction and low rent.
And that this would just be in this area or
just
all
in
over
Multnomah
the country?
County. Just and this was
county.
Probably, well, this was several years ago. So, you know, I think it needs to be more like $5 billion now.
And on top of that, I think it's a legal problem too. Our laws are not favorable towards tenants. I mean, if you think about it, you only have two choices to have a place to live. You either own or you rent. If you don't own because you've lost it, or you're preparing to own, or you simply can't because of various limitations within your life, you have no choice but to rent.
Right.
And if you can't rent, then you're homeless or you're looking for a place to live. So the law that we currently have favors people who own places to rent. Landlords is I was trying to avoid that. Landlords,
the evil landlords.
No, they're not evil.
They're not evil. A lot of them are really good.
They are really good, and I will say that, you know, the relationship between landlord and tenant, it needs to be symbiotic. I mean, essentially, you're having someone who's helping to pay your mortgage and helping to pay your costs, your taxes, your insurance, the maintenance of
or providing you with an income if you happen to own it.
Right, and providing you with an income if you happen to own it, or you're trying to build up the equity within your property. But back to what I was saying, it's a legal problem. Our laws allow people to be kicked out for no reason. Our laws allow unchecked rent increases. I think there was one family in Southwest Portland that received a 350% rent increase. 350% rent increase. And most recently, we worked with a couple buildings who received 108% rent increases, the entire building. But the problem is that's legal.
Right.
And so, going to your question of solutions, HB 2004 that recently passed the House in a historic victory is now in the Senate and will bring to question this legality of being able to raise rents completely with unfettered control and giving someone unfettered control of their housing by saying you can live here, yes or no. No reason.
So that's a no cause bill, basically. Is that what you?
HB 2004 does a few things. So it it removes the language that allows a landlord to and terminate somebody's lease, whether it's month to month or a fixed term, for no reason or for no cause, or as the landlord say, terminating a lease, terminating the contract, letting it run out, and not renewing another one. And then it also states that rent increases it lifts the ban. It lifts the ban on rent.
Right now, there's a statewide ban.
There's a statewide ban on rent
control.
On
any kind of rent control.
So local jurisdictions like Multnomah County, like City of Portland, City of Bend, City of Eugene, City of Ashland, wherever it may be in the state of Oregon, they cannot consider rent stabilization policies. I wouldn't say rent control because I don't think anybody's looking at a hard cap. We know that that doesn't work. But rent stabilization, thinking about the rate at which rent increases are allowed, et cetera. Whatever it may be that a local jurisdiction considers, they can't even talk about it right now because there's a ban on rent control. So HB 2004 lifts that ban. Mm-hmm. And as it currently stands, I mean, of course it's in negotiations, but as it currently stands, any development that happens, once a new development receives a certificate of occupancy, they are exempt from rent increases for a period of up to 5 years. So after that 5-year mark, then whatever local jurisdiction has thought about implementing in rent stabilization, it would apply to that building. So then
local jurisdictions would then have to develop their own plans,
right,
and have it run by their constituents, et cetera, et cetera. So
right,
once the ban is lifted, it doesn't mean we then have rent stabilization.
Right.
It means all jurisdictions at least then have that opportunity
to talk
consider
about it.
That.
Right.
Yeah.
To have all the tools to be able to talk about it, because
right,
we don't have all the tools to talk about it right now.
Right.
And I just want to say, I think Katrina's absolutely right that it's the tools, so the legal opportunity to expand how we address rents and evictions and rent increases, combined with more money,
mm-hmm,
and like the great work that Welcome Home is doing, that it's all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And In many ways, it's also the community will to say we are going to, as a broad community, address the issues that are faced by very, very, very low-income people.
Yeah, right. It's got to be a three-pronged approach. We've got to preserve existing affordable housing, we have to build new
more
affordable housing, and we have to implement reasonable, common-sense tenant protections for people to maintain housing stability. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, housing instability affects all of us, whether we like it or not.
Right, right.
All of us. If someone loses their house due to eviction, they become houseless, the taxpayers end up helping to foot that bill because they may be receiving assistance. Businesses pay the cost because the stress affects employees' ability to work. I mean, we've heard from employers all across Oregon who are saying, I may have to move, or I'm not retaining employees, or my turnover rate is really high. I mean, everybody pays the cost of housing instability. It's not just reduced to the relationship between landlord and tenant. And for
so
the elderly,
true,
it's even more problematic. Because then at that point, you know, we're talking health issues help to complicate disability. It's a mess.
Yeah.
It's a mess. We got to fix it.
And you guys are all working on fixing it.
Yes.
I think another aspect of it, so 2004, there was another bill that people were considering. It was 2006. How is that going?
House Bill 2006.
That was about mortgage interest deduction.
Yeah, I think Trom can talk about that.
Yeah, okay. So basically the mortgage interest deduction, it costs taxpayers $1 billion every biennium. And what we're doing is subsidizing.
And that's in the state of Oregon?
Yes, in the state of Oregon. So there's a national MID, but then we're focusing purely on the state MID. But what we're doing is subsidizing home ownership, which is great when we're talking about people who are struggling to buy their first home, or low-income families who are, you know, really finding it difficult to save up to purchase a home. But because the interest deduction is something that you can write off as, you know, up to $15,000 per year on the interest that you pay on your mortgage, what it essentially means is that if you buy a bigger home, you receive a bigger deduction, and where the state is basically providing a larger subsidy for larger homes. And what that means is that a lot of that money, a lot of that $1 billion is going towards folks who don't necessarily are not in that critical need phase of their life, right? And so what we're trying to do is rebalance it, recognizing that yes, assistance for homeownership is important, but it should be prioritizing folks who are struggling to even find stability. Uh-huh. And if we divert some of those funds from subsidizing second homes, vacation homes, which a lot of times is happening, then
or we can, multiple homes that you're renting out.
Exactly, yeah. Then what we can do instead is put more money into building affordable homes, preserving affordable homes, and funding emergency housing assistance, rental assistance, things of that nature. So MID reform is something that I'm really passionate about. And unfortunately, it did not make it out of the House this session. But, you know, we see it as a long battle, just like inclusionary housing. Lifting the ban on inclusionary housing took a few years. And we know that tenant protections are really urgent this session. And so, you know, just having that be the big lift this session has been incredibly important, and we know that MID reform is we're in it for the long haul, and it's going to happen.
So you're going to keep battling for it.
Yes,
that makes a lot of sense.
And it sounds like people could call or take action. I mean, call your congressman, right?
Call your senator
in Salem.
Yeah, yeah. For HB 2004. Folks,
the senators need to be called about 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully 206 comes back as some new name next year, but it's called Mortgage Interest Deduction, or MID, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, we have a hashtag for it. It's hashtag MID Remedy, because $500 million a year could be a huge fix.
That's half our billion.
Yeah,
basically.
Exactly. That's half the billion that Susan Evans wanted, right? We got to fulfill that wish.
And I think looking at all possible revenue streams and solutions and talking about them and saying, you know, clarifying the facts, looking at what the mortgage interest deduction elimination for a portion of homeowners, not all homeowners, right. So it doesn't include a person who's lower income, but looking at that solution, looking at the reform of our tenant-landlord relationships that legally, mm-hmm. Looking at more affordable housing bonds. One of the things that Northwest Pilot Project is really promoting is funding housing assistance vouchers on a local level. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. To see if we could locally control an amount of money that could be allocated as permanent subsidies for housing.
So we'd have our own Section 8 vouchers,
yeah,
basically.
And we like to call it Section P for Portland. Uh-huh. But yeah, essentially our own local Section 8.
I just want to let listeners know again, you're tuned to KBOO Portland. This is the Recovery Zone. I'm speaking here about healing our planet, basically by healing the housing crisis. When we've got four people really active in that, Joanne Harrigal of Elders in Action, Laura Galino de Lovato of the Northwest Pilot Project, Katrina Holland of the Oregon Community Alliance of Tenants, who's got Gavin in her arms, Gavin sleeping beautifully, mm-hmm. and also Tram Huang of Welcome Home. And it's really good to have you guys here talking about this. You just mentioned inclusionary zoning. Mm-hmm. That was something that wasn't happening but is now. And I wasn't even sure what is inclusionary zoning and how is that helping?
Sure. So in a nutshell, it says new development that is built within the city of Portland must include a certain percentage of affordable housing units.
When did that start?
It started in February of 2016. So the buildings that we are seeing getting built right now are not a part
subject
of that.
To it,
are not subject to it, because it's basically any project that walks into the permitting office starting February 2016.
17.
Oh, sorry. Yes, you're right. 2017.
Oh,
thank you.
Just passed.
Yeah.
So it's happening yet.
It is not, but I will say that we have heard that there are some developers who are opting to do inclusionary housing
anyway.
With their building right now. Yeah, anyway. There's a significant pipeline, so we'll have to wait a little while before it actually becomes a mandate for some folks. But there are developers who are opting into it at this time, so we should see some.
And then
the next
how affordable is it, that kind of thing? Is it really affordable?
It would be more affordable than the market rate.
Yes. Right.
Yeah, okay. It's more affordable than the market rate.
Is it at that 30% thing that you're
No, it's at the 80%. So basically they can choose, developers can choose between having 20% of the units be at 80% median family income or 10% of the units be at 60%. So I mean, when we're thinking about that number, we're not talking about the folks, the 0 to 30, right? We're not talking about the seniors, the people who are living on disability. We're talking about the case managers that serve those people.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's this odd,
the school teachers, the post office people, right.
Right, so it's good affordability because it reduces the pressure on those really low-income apartments. But at the same time, we're going to need a little more. So it's just one of the tools. You know, it's one of the many tools that we need to be using.
Another tool that I wanted to point out that we've been working on, Elders in Action is teaming with Ecumenical Ministries and Multnomah County and CARE Oregon and the Housing Bureau in the city of Portland to reignite a program that used to exist called HomeShare, where we would actually take people who are either own their home or are renting their home and have some space that's available for people that are looking for homes and match them up so that people that are looking for places and don't have very much money might either trade some rent as well as services for perhaps older adults that are in their home that need a little bit more services and maybe just a little bit of rent. So that program is probably going to be up and running post-summer of 2017, and we're really excited about it.
Yeah, that sounds good. And there's another program I read, Let's Share Housing.
Right. It's a similar kind of thing, only it sort of functions on a meetup basis where people get together who are want to offer a place to be, and they meet people who are looking for places to rent, and they get to meet each other real time as opposed to just sort of looking in Craigslist.
Right.
And I think Michelle Fiasca is the one that runs that, and that's ongoing as well.
Right. Those both sound really good. And I just did want to mention, too, to the listeners, you can call in if you have questions and want to participate in this. The phone here at KBOO is 503-231-8187. And let's see, I just read there's another program, maybe you guys know about it, called Senior Citizens Rent Increases Exemption. Does anybody know about that? It's a pre-existing program that freezes people's rents. And anyway, I was wondering if it was happening in Oregon, but it sounds like it's...
We'll have to go look that up right now.
Yeah, I have to go look that up. There's my phone.
Right. And in 2015, Oregon, Portland did declare a state of emergency around homeless. This was October of 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And it converted a former Army Reserve building into an emergency shelter for women, got more funding for homeless. So has that really taken off, this idea that there's an emergency? I mean, is that sort of really in everybody's consciousness at this point, do you think?
I mean, that was in response to, to give a little bit of history, Community Alliance of Tenants launched the Renter State of Emergency campaign, I believe in September or October of 2015, and the city responded by declaring this housing and homelessness state of emergency. And I would definitely say that it's elevated the conversation of housing, but in terms of swift action, historic landmark policies that are going to address housing instability for the long haul, I think we're still working on that. The Portland Relocation Ordinance that Commissioner Udaly championed was a significant win. The increase in notice periods from, I think, 30 or 60 days
up to
90 days gave a little bit of relief. So, I mean, we're definitely seeing some action that's being taken, but we still have a ways to go. And I think that's part of the reason why we're really championing HB 2004 through the Senate to lift that ban on rent stabilization so local communities can have all the tools at their disposal to address their housing crises. I mean, the city of Bend in particular, I think, has an under 1% vacancy rate. So you can imagine the rents in that area, or if you get evicted or if you get a rent increase that you can't afford. I mean, there was one employer who called me from Bend and said, "I can't hire people that I want to hire, because they can't find a place to live. Mm-hmm. The rents are so high, or the vacancy rate is so low." Eugene is facing the same thing. So We need all the tools. We need all the tools. I would say that the housing emergency has elevated the conversation, but we still have a ways to go to get to that landmark housing policy decisions. I will say these new programs for Let's Share Housing and the Home Share, I think is good. We're making progress.
Right.
And we did see more shelters open.
Yeah, we did.
And that was good.
Yes.
And we,
I think for a while, Mayor Hales, too,
Mayor
letting
Hales,
people camp for a little bit, right?
Mayor Hales had the there was no prohibition on camping.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And how's that going now? Has that changed?
That did change. I believe that was lifted, or there was something.
There's been sweeps.
Yes, there have been various sweeps of homeless camps, and that's really challenging. But there were more shelters that were open, and Northwest Pilot Project did see a small bump in the amount of assistance it got financially from Multnomah County for rent assistance.
I will also say that it helped move our local government agencies as well. There was a long discussion, like decades long discussion, about having a joint office of homelessness between the city of Portland and Multnomah County, and that finally has been established. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing some progress. We got a little ways to go, but we're getting there.
And Trom, you were talking about you want to get all the counties involved in this, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's something that you guys are working on?
Yeah, I mean, we're specifically focusing on the legislative session right now and gathering people to build community and build power to demand action from our legislators. And I hope you don't mind that I'm making a plug for this, but the Oregon Housing Alliance is hosting a Housing Opportunity Day on Thursday, May 18th in Salem. Mm-hmm. And the last one we had in March was incredible. Over 200 people from around the state showed up. And the thing is, it's not just for lobbyists and advocates. It's for case managers. It's for homeowners who feel the pain in their communities and want to do something and want to share their story.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite people that I get to work with, her name is Maggie. She's a senior that lives in Rosemont Court, which is an affordable housing building. And she came to testify with us at the City of Portland when we were launching the ballot measure. She came to Salem with us to talk to her legislators. And you don't have to be a lobbyist to care about this and to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
She comes with us twice a year, and it's so fulfilling for everyone for legislators to hear her story, to meet a community member, for us to empower individuals to play a role in this. And if you can't make it to Salem, that's fine. You can call your legislator. You can Google Oregon Find Your Legislator, pop in your address, and they'll tell you who your state reps and senators are.
Mm-hmm.
Make calls, write postcards. There's so many ways to get engaged and take action because it takes all of our voices and all of our stories.
Right. Yeah. It's really important. And it sounds like you get the people go down to Salem, and then they're actually trying to persuade the lobbyists to pass some of these bills.
Legislators, yeah.
Yeah. And so when you're working on this, though, what do you find what kind of hit back do you get from representatives down there? I mean, do some of them just say, this is ridiculous, we can't do this, we can't afford it? I mean, what are they saying in response? Like, how come, for instance, MID didn't pass?
That is a good question, and I don't think I spend enough time in Salem to understand where the numbers were for that vote.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, there's just so much. I remember Representative Alyssa Kenny-Geyer saying that during past legislative sessions, her committee, which is Housing and Human Services, they've seen maybe like two or three housing bills, and this session, she saw over 50.
Oh, wow.
So I think the volume is, they can only handle so much, and I can, I think we can all appreciate that.
Yeah.
And there are some things that have more urgency than others, and I think that as advocates, we really need to unite and figure out that there are so many tools that we need to be fighting for, and we just need to fight for the right one at the right moment. And this time around, we might have other priorities rise up, but we all have our eyes on the prize, which is all the tools that we need.
Yeah, and I was really encouraged to see the spike in housing bills this year, and I think partly it came from a recognition that the housing crisis wasn't and isn't just in Portland or Multnomah County. It really is statewide, although it's driven significantly about what's going on. And I think that part of it, too, is like with the mortgage interest deduction. I think a lot of people didn't understand the specifics of how that was going to work. So they thought, oh, my God, my mortgage interest deduction is at risk.
Right.
And now what it's done, even though it didn't pass, the good news is that people have been introduced to the concept. And now we can talk about it, take it to the next step, continue that education.
And help and them realize the it's next, not going to affect them particularly.
Right. In the next biennium, we can it could be reintroduced and more people will be aware of it and aware of the positive impact it can have on their low-income community members and neighbors.
Yeah. For HB 2004, it depends on who you talk to. I mean, I would, you know, the typical arguments that, well, the market is just hot right now and we need to let the market do its thing. Eventually, it's going to cool off and people will be able to afford it. And our response to that is, okay, and there's real significant collateral damage that can happen as a result of that. And the rest of our entire economy, the rest of our population has to bear that cost. And so that's unfair. I think, you know, economics 101, they say, well, it's supply and demand. As soon as we have enough supply, demand will keep up. Or excuse me. Yeah, I said it the right way. I always get those confused. But also, if you go a little further into Economics 101, it says when we have a runaway market, government intervenes. And I think that's what we're seeing at the legislative session. We have to be very diligent about what we're going to do to address this housing crisis, I think.
And we do have a caller.
Oh, we do. Okay.
Yeah. Barry Joe, what would you like to say to Barry Joe?
Good morning.
Hi.
I'd like to say that... I checked again yesterday, and I was at the affordable housing. It's on the Oregon, the state office of, it's an agency, Housing and Community Development. Affordable housing inventory 2013, 2014, 2015, so we could see the stock of affordable housing statewide. One of the properties is the one I visited last night. It's 4066 Northeast Grand Avenue. It's a block off of Northeast MLK. It's in between the major streets, Shaver and Skidmore. And I talked to the neighbor there, and he confirmed it enhanced my fears, is that it's actually been vacant for 6 years. I've been beating a dead horse. My contact with all of the city agencies, going to all the housing forums, contacting the various groups. Why is this affordable housing vacant? And I had a 30-day no-cost eviction there in 2005. Came home to find myself locked out in violation of a state pending appeal. The case was filed when my rent was paid, and there was prohibition against the landlord using a 30-day no-cause when the rent was paid. The landlord destroyed over $20,000 in two distinct episodes in 2006, and the very apartment that I was evicted from through that whole process, where my life's work was destroyed, is owned by Portland Community Reinvestment Investment Initiatives Incorporated, which was by PCRI. The executive director, Maxine Fitzpatrick, who was on board when I endured that experience a dozen years ago, is on the Portland Housing Development Group. She was part of the folks that made up the committee to decide how to spend our new $300 million affordable housing bond. And there's been an utter media blackout on this. No one will touch the fact that we have affordable housing stock. There's well over $250,000 of vouchers.
Okay, hang on a minute.
I'm going to ring off and you all address that. 406 East Grand, Northeast Grand is currently affordable housing stock that's vacant.
Is that
for years?
Have you guys know anything about this, or have you run into this issue where affording housing stock doesn't have any people in it?
I have not personally run into that.
We have not either.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we hear from folks in shelters who are facing wait lists of 1.5 to 2 years.
Yeah, and some 3 to 5.
So
yeah, I would love to dig into this a little bit more.
Okay, so when you guys get back to the office, you can check out 406 East Grand and see what's going on, huh? And see if that's a place that's available that's empty or not. I want to let listeners know again, you're tuned to KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter. This is the Recovery Zone, focused on healing our world. Tram Huang of Welcome Home, Lori Galino de Lovato of the Northwest Pilot Project, Katrina Holland of I'm losing my mind here. Okay, wait a minute. Katrina Holland of the Oregon Community Alliance of Tenants and Joanne Harrigal of Elders in Action are all here talking about homelessness and especially how it affects the elderly and how we are trying to find solutions to fix all that. And if you want to call in, we just have 15 minutes left. The number here is 503-231-8187. I know another solution that I read about too is that the city is considering building little tiny houses in people's backyards. Do you guys know about that? Do you think that would be helpful or not?
Accessory dwelling units?
Yeah.
We've heard about it. Community Alliance of Tenants hasn't been as active in that conversation.
I just don't know that you can build them fast enough to accommodate all the people that are coming out of the housing market. Yeah. It's another tool,
right?
But I'm not seeing it proliferate fast enough.
Yeah. I mean, the reality is yes, we definitely have to build, but building takes time.
It's sort of like
in some cases years.
What we said originally, you need money. You need to throw a lot of money at this right away.
Well, and the money can be put toward building, and as Katrina said, you know, building takes time.
Yeah.
And I think what we're facing right now is the need for more housing units, like through the bond measure, through other building ideas. But we also need financial assistance to support current tenants who cannot afford increasing rents. Mm-hmm. So we have to do both. And I think the tiny
and
houses...
And we have to change the law.
And we have, right. So there's multiple things that have to happen. I think the tiny houses is great in that it's people thinking about how can I help? How can I do something in my house or my yard or my contribution? But we also want to say if we're talking about community resources and public funding, what is the biggest bang that we can get for the buck? So the price is a little steep on the tiny houses.
Right. Yeah. And I would also say, I mean, sure, tiny houses are a great idea, but we also have to think equitably about the situation. There are many families in different cultures and traditions that have larger families or that stay together for generations, and tiny houses just won't do. And do we say that they don't deserve housing either? I mean, we have to be very intentional about multiple tools to address this issue.
And I want to add to that to say that, you know, a tiny house of 200 square feet for a family for more than maybe 2 months would be a huge challenge. We've really got to get ourselves sort of to Katrina's point about equity. We also have to be thinking about permanent housing, the kind of permanent housing that we would each want to live in if we didn't have that now. And that means housing where there's room for kids and families, and it's adequate room. There's, you know, the appropriate number of bathrooms and kitchens and all of that. And so there's some solutions that are really good short term, but our long term goal has to be on available, affordable, permanent housing.
And keeping people in their house.
Yeah.
Right. It sounds like that's a big part of it. We just keep them from being evicted in the first place. But we have another caller. Catherine, what would you like to say? Catherine, are you still there?
For rent apartment that I have above my house, upstairs, and it's very affordable, and it's centrally located, really nice location, nice backyard. And I'm Catherine, and I'm at 503-282-1516, and it's on 13th, just off Fremont Northeast.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Catherine.
Great, Catherine. Okay, people, call in if you need a place to stay.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, and do we have another caller? Eric.
Oh. Hi, Eric.
Sounds like Eric disappeared on us. Oh. Eric, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yay.
Great, okay. What would you like to ask?
I'd like to ask, is there any effective way to find out information on a property that was foreclosed? Because my property was foreclosed upon. I was never notified.
Wow. So, and is this possibly you weren't able to pay the taxes on it or something?
I have no idea. My ex and I broke up, and the people, the guy that she was with, I don't know, somehow he got his name on the property without my knowledge.
I think you could probably call either Coalition, the Alliance of Tenants, or you could call Elders in Action, or you could actually try Oregon Legal Aid would also potentially help you.
Legal aid is so strapped, okay. They can't help people.
Well, try CAT or Elders in Action too, and we'll see what we can do to help you work through that.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
And I have to give a little correction here. I think I said 406 Northeast Grand when Barry Joe was talking about that address where supposedly a place is vacant. It's actually 4066 Northeast Grand. So that might be some research project for people. And so finally, let's just, because you guys do offer help, maybe really quick in the last little bit of time, 2 minutes each, let us know what each group here actually does to help.
Sure. Okay. Shall I start?
Sorry, yeah, Joanne Herigal.
This is Joanne Herigal from Elders in Action. We educate, advocate, and serve older adults. We have a helpline that you can call during the day. Well, you can call anytime you want, leave us a message, but we're open from 8:30 to 5 o'clock, 5 days a week. And we field calls from older adults. We then either refer you to the service that would be best for you, handle your call directly by one of our MSWs that are on staff, or we will hook you up with or connect you with one of our probably 140 volunteers that we have that are personal advocates that will just walk you through administrative or process issues that you're dealing with. We also do a lot of advocacy, so we go to the state legislature, we work with the city and county officials, and we work with other partner organizations to build coalitions to try and sort of mitigate some of the things that we're seeing that affect older adults, like housing and food security and transportation issues.
That's great. And Trump Wong.
Yeah, so the Welcome Home Coalition, while we do not do, we don't provide direct service, we focus on the systems level change, right? So we're engaging with all of these organizations, Elders in Action, Northwest Pilot Project, the Community Alliance of Tenants, and 150 other local organizations and neighborhood associations and everything across the board, because we all know that housing is impacting that specific sector of our work. So we're trying to get folks out of their silos, working together, and not only just engaging organizations, but also everyday people, right? One of my favorite things to do on the job is go into affordable housing buildings and hear success stories of what it means to have a home.
Right.
And engaging those people who now have stability and have the capacity to share their story, to use those stories to share with legislators and to bring about change. And so a lot of what we do is empowering people, providing them with the skills so that they can make a difference in their community, whether that means writing a postcard, calling a legislator, coming with us to Salem. We're building that movement across the community from organizations to residents.
And that's welcomehome.com, right?
It's welcomehomecoalition.org.
Oh,
and then
okay.
We're also active on Facebook, and you'll get to see a lot of our resident stories on Facebook, so that's a great way to connect.
Welcomehomecoalition.org. And your eldersinaction.org?
Yeah.
Joanne? Okay,
yeah.
Great. And how about you, Katrina Holland?
Sure. So Community Alliance of Tenants seeks to educate and empower tenants to demand safe, stable, and affordable housing. We do that through a three-pronged approach. We do it through tenant education, tenant organizing, and tenant advocacy. With tenant education, we operate a renter's rights hotline that's open Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 1 to 5, Tuesdays from 6 to 8, and Saturday also from 1 to 5.
And what's that phone number?
503-288-0130. Again, that's 503-288-0130.
So today's one of the days they could call.
Yes, today is one of the days that they can call. And we help counsel folks on their housing situation. So dealing with repairs or rent increase or eviction or connecting people to different resources like Elders in Action, like Northwest Pilot Project, legal aid to deal with their legal issues in their housing situation. Uh-oh,
there's somebody
who's getting upset.
Gavin's advocating for Community Alliance of Tenants.
It is. We also host renters' rights workshops throughout the community in partnership with other organizations and also hosting them ourselves. We do some tenant organizing, building-based and issue-based, which is just like the HB 2004. So we empower tenants to go with us also to Salem to call and talk to their legislators about lifting the ban on rent stabilization and ending no-cause evictions, among a suite of other things. And we also do some leadership development of folks who want to get more involved in the housing advocacy scene, developing their leadership and knowledge and capacity around housing advocacy. So we've been doing that for about 21 years now, and we're still kicking.
Cool. Yeah. And the website for you?
www.oregoncat.org.
Great. Mm-hmm. Okay, and finally, Laura from the Northwest Pilot Project.
So we have been around for almost 50 years providing assistance to low-income seniors in Multnomah County. And we serve anyone 55 and over, and we primarily do housing placement assistance. So for people who are very low income and are really having trouble navigating the rental world, we can help them out. If they live in Multnomah County, they can contact us, and we provide short-term rent assistance, eviction prevention. Beautiful. We work with them to do a housing plan. So we go through all of the barriers that they might have to housing that they might not realize are barriers if they are in a situation where they have gotten an eviction or rent increase, or they just got a job and have been homeless and now they're looking for a place to live. And so we work with them one-on-one.
And people can call?
People can call.
Quick, the phone number, and then we got to go.
Okay,
well, just say nwpilotproject.com.
nwpilotproject.org. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, just check that on your cell phone if you've got one. Okay, and I just want to let listeners know you've been hearing from Katrina Holland of the Oregon Community Alliance of Tenants, Joanne Harrigal of Elders in Action, Tram Huang of Welcome Home, and Laura Galino de Lovato of the Northwest Pilot Project, talking about how we can help the elderly stay in their homes. This has been the Recovery Zone on KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter, and thanks to Tammy for her fine engineering, and thank you for listening.
Thanks for joining
us.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Eugene Rashad. Join me every Saturday from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. for the best in jazz on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial.
But I dig, and I know you dig, because I got 4 requests for this thing already today. Strutting right with it.
That was KBOO volunteer disc jockey George Page. Page has been playing jazz and popular black music on KBOO for the past 12 years.
What I do to the audience I draw, hopefully, is to please them with all types of black music. Mostly what you can't hear.